You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Friday, 1st of August. We've got U.S. unemployment 2.30, our time expected 4.2% versus 4.1% previously. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Scott Lowe, PSG Old Oak, and Anheuser-Busch results. They seem to be managing their margins fairly well, even as maybe we drink less beer. And then some of the best and worst of July. Peter Hugo from Stanlib, active and passive, living side by side and maximizing offshore opportunities. And then thoughts from me, I saw yesterday cut rates 0.25%, but they also seem to have changed our inflation target. I think we now have a 3% target. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb, power transmission request for quotations, the biggest infrastructure program since 1994, aimed at constructing 14,000 kilometers of transmission lines. Bloomberg, Trump unveils new tariff regime to reshape trade order, set to go live now on 7 August. No news on our tariff rate, assuming it's 30%, and I suppose it starts today. Morning markets, US was red, S&P down 0.4, NASDAQ off 0.6%. The East is all red, Sydney a couple of points, 0.02% lower. Tokyo, also just a couple of points, 0.05% lower. Hong Kong is off 0.2% and Tencent 0.4% down. Commodities, all red. Gold futures, 3,343. Brent, 7,180. Platinum, 1,296. Palladium, 1,215. The Rand is 1,823. Bitcoin, 115,900. Top 40 opening call, red open, 770 points or 0.85% lower.
MoneyWeb now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Skalk Lowe, PSG Old Oak. Skalk, Anheuser-Busch, in some senses defensive, although that debt burden from buying SAB Miller, and maybe we are drinking a little bit less beer. But in a world where they managed to get revenue only 3%, they managed to get normalized EBITDA 6.5%, almost 2 billion of normalized underlying profit for the period. Your quick take on Anheuser-Busch.
Morning, Simon, and good morning to all the listeners. 99 bottles of beer on the wall. Now we know that with one of those bottles will fall off the wall, you know, share price will drop 11% like yesterday. I thought it was a really interesting set of results because, you know, at first glance, as you actually introduced this, revenue growth by 3%, normalized EBITDA, you know, growth of 6.5%. And as you went through this, I thought initial glance was this is a solid set of results.
Yeah.
And then the share price opened. I mean, I think that it opened down 8% eventually progressed to that 11% down yesterday. And now you started to go through these set of results. And as you mentioned, beer volumes down. I mean, down quite a bit, you know, 1.9% down. And remember, it's not just a 1.9% down. People forecast it's going to be a little bit softer, but it was about three times softer than expected. So that's a bad run. Will they be able to turn that around? If I've gone through the results, I thought there's a few things that stood out for me that was really, really interesting. The first point was the non-alcoholic beer portfolio. I mean, that surged, 33%. That's massive. Just shows you sort of a trend. People drinking less beer, but even if they drink beer, the younger generation now tend to go for the non-alcoholics. And then, you know, where they made their growth in revenue was still with their mega brands. I mean, it shows you, stay with the main portfolio because these mega brands, led by Corona naturally, that has grown and that has increased by 5.6%. Over the same period. So, yeah, you've mentioned in the intro. It was a solid set of results. Decline in volumes, and I think going forward, I think they're going to be struggling still for the latter part of the year as well. It's very similar to the Bats, Philip Morris.
Yeah.
You know, people tend to, the volumes of cigarettes or tobacco products decreased over the decades, but they still manage to still grow their revenues. Just showing you that you will be paying more for your beer. Profit margins will go up. You will pay more for your beer, but the beer drinkers will keep on drinking beer.
Yeah, in that sense, there is a there's a core who will, as you say, be drinking the beer regardless. We're now in August. Hopefully, that means next stop is summer. But in the meantime, you haven't done it yet. You will do it, I imagine, over the weekend. You're going to go over, look back at what's happened so far in the year and the month and stuff. Some of your highlights or maybe lowlights from July. And it ended with a storming MPC meeting with inflation rates changing, Trump throwing tariffs around. But what were some of your high and lows?
Look, Simon, I think, you know, broadly speaking, I think we as an African can be really, really proud and, you know, we can feel good because as we sit here, you know, last month, that the JSE again managed to outperform the MSCI all country world in dollar terms. So, so it's a first point of entry. I think we've had a solid month from an equity point of view. The JSE produced 2.3% growth for the month. Bring the year to date. Here we go. 19.4% year to date growth on the JSE. You and I often have this conversation going into the year. You know, thinking, you know, first 7 months of the year, will we be sitting here at 19% growth for the year? You know, say where do we sign? But I think the star performer, even bonds, SA bonds did phenomenal. They all yielded a return of close to 3%, 2.7%. But the star performer, SA Property Index, that was close to 5% up for July. When we look at the individual stocks, the best performer for the month was Adcock Ingram. We know there is a story that Indian company now buying into them. They will be delisting for the second time. So it's one of our oldest companies that's going to be delisting. That yielded a return of 37%. And I think we're not going to go through all them specifically, but Sasol, I mean, we need to mention Sasol because we've been hard on Sasol. They had a nice recovery in July. They produced 19% growth. When we look at the laggers, we need to look at the laggers as well. Bytes Technologies, they came out with a profit warning earlier this month, dropped 28% in July. And then all the companies that reported over the last few days, Mondi, down 15%. They showed a drop in their earnings, and that saw them retrace the share price. Anheuser-Busch, that was down 12.4%. And Richemont had a phenomenal first half of the year. July just took a bit of a breather. That was down 11%. So I think in general, I mean, we should not be focusing on these retraces or the negative performance too much because, I mean, like I mentioned, we've had a phenomenal July and we had a phenomenal 2025 in May. May it last for the final 5 months.
Hey, gent, I tell you what, 19.4%, I'd be happy. Let's close the market. We'll come back in January. We'll take the 19.4 for the year. For 7 months, that is spectacular. Skalklo, PSG Old Oak, always appreciate the early morning time. Give you money, smoother returns for Stanlib Asset Management. The Stanlib Flexible Income Fund's agile investment process preserves and grows capital in all markets.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
I'm chatting with Peter Hugo, Chief Commercial Officer, Stanlib Asset Management. Peter, appreciate the time. You've recently joined Stanlib, many years' experience in the broader industry. Give us some insight around the sort of state of play at Stanlib.
Yeah, thanks, Simon. Always good talking to you. Stanlib is in a very exciting phase at the moment. We've sharpened our strategic focus and we've deepened our investment capabilities, doing a lot of work across our various offerings to ensure we have a very comprehensive and high-quality offering for our clients. We've made a lot of significant investments in our operations and technology, as well as a global partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management, one of the top five global asset managers in the world. And we're also trying to leverage the strength of the Standard Bank Group and Liberty to enhance our distribution and operational platforms that can enhance the offering that we take to our clients.
Part of this process, you've got the roles of, you've got Stanlib Asset Management and then the Stanlib LISP. What differentiates those two?
Yes, Simon, I think it's very important to understand. Standup Asset Management is an asset management business with a comprehensive range of active and passive solutions that we sell to a client base that is retail, wholesale, and institutional. Mm-hmm. And we invest in assets domestically and globally. The core focus of our business is obviously to deliver alpha on active strategies for our clients and build value-adding solutions for these clients, deliver great service. The LISP, on the other hand, and maybe not everyone knows what a LISP, it's a linked investment service provider. Mm-hmm. So the Standup LISP, it's effectively an investment platform that connects retail clients with their financial planners to a wide range of investment products and underlying funds that they can invest in.
Gotcha. Let's talk around the asset management business. You've mentioned the sort of strengthening ties, particularly around distribution with Standard Bank and Liberty. What are sort of key areas of focus for the asset management aside from that right now?
Yeah, so I think the key focus for us is to look at our entire offering and to ensure we make consistent incremental improvements in our offerings. So on the equity side, we focus a lot on our South African equity offering, which is managed by Rademeyer van Mark and his systematic solutions team. On the multi-asset side, Marius Oberholzer runs that business for us and his team, and they're also working extremely closely with the global multi-asset team of JP Morgan, that we bring that global learnings also into our South African multi-asset team. As mentioned on JP Morgan's side, I think they've helped us to bring fantastic offering of global equities and global bonds to our South African client base. And then on the alternative side, there are also some interesting things. Over the last year, we've quietly built a very strong infrastructure business that invests heavily into South African infrastructure. And the assets has grown very well. And more importantly, the returns on that business has been very great for clients with very long-term time horizons. So all of these are like continuous improvements that we try and make and deliver that extra value for our clients.
And how do you see the role of the active management space and it evolving in a world that is sort of increasingly sort of dominated, not dominated, but certainly an increasing rise in the passive strategy? Where does active sit in that?
Yes, in my view, I think the world is very complex and the problems that we try and solve for clients and trying to solve their retirement problems are complex, and we should be able to use all the tools available to us. So I see passive as a very important role to play in client solutions, especially for very cost-conscious investors or in very efficient markets where you invest. At the same time, we also strongly believe in active management. It remains an essential part, particularly in markets like South Africa, where efficiencies and behavioral factors create opportunity for skilled managers to add value. So we see both of these to play in concert and deliver value to our clients, and clients will typically make use of both of these. And that's why we offer both of these within our business. Both of them are available, and we see clients blend both of them together to deliver great solutions to our clients.
Very much a sense of it's not an either or. It's a, for want of a terrible phrase, it's horses for courses. It's the right passive or active, or perhaps a blend of, for the right person at the right time.
Absolutely. And we see that more and more. And the conversation has moved very far from is it the one or the other one? And as you say, horses for courses. And probably when I look at client portfolios or pension funds, I typically see them using both of those in building solutions for the client. In the end, we need to build the best outcomes, and our clients who build for their clients need to build the best outcomes for them. And whatever tools is available, I think we must be open-minded enough to make use of.
You mentioned your partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. How's that supporting your strategy? Are they sort of, in a sense, the offshore component of the investment arm in some senses?
Yes, they are a big part of the offshore component of the investment offering that we have. We also manage some of the offshore assets in-house. Mm-hmm. But I think what was critical to the partnership with JP Morgan is their ability to engage with our multi-asset and equity teams and allow them deep insight. So they sit in those multi-asset meetings with us, and that's where you can translate your global asset allocation decisions even into your local decisions and across local and global. And I think that is critical in a world where the limitations on investing between local and global assets are less and less for our clients. And that is why It allows us to bring world-class solutions to our clients by partnering with a top five asset manager like JP Morgan.
Yeah, and it is. I mean, they are a giant asset manager. Offshore investing, certainly it's been gaining traction amongst African investors. The local market's having a great 2025, but over the longer term, offshore's been a huge part of the investment return. What sort of trends are you seeing in the offshore space that StanLib is able to leverage?
Yes, Simon, I think globally you can see offshore managers are investing heavily in technology, specifically AI these days, to enhance not only their investment processes, but also their business, how they service clients. And we're seeing a lot of that in South Africa as well, but naturally at a much smaller scale. But again, maybe to give you one of the reasons why we partnered with JP Morgan, given their massive size, they run about $3.4 trillion. Over the last year, they spent $17 billion on investment tech, including a dedicated AI team. And for us, we don't have that checkbook to write those kinds of checks, but they are very willing to share and engage with us. And we're a direct beneficiary of that, that can translate in value add for our clients. Other trends, as you mentioned, passive is obviously continues to gather a lot of momentum globally. And that's also why we've got One Invest Business, our passive business, where we provide a lot of local and global solutions, passive solutions to our clients. And maybe one other thing to point out, globally, there's a lot of focus on alternative assets, including unlisted credit and infrastructure. And I think both of those are critical parts of our own business, where we've got credit business integrated in our fixed income business, and we've built up a very scalable infrastructure business that gives South African investors the opportunity to invest in long-term South African infrastructure and improve our country at the same time.
Yeah, and $17 billion, for reference, they could buy one of our banks for $17 billion. They just used it
or
for
two.
or perhaps two, depending which ones they wanted. Peter Hugo, Chief Commercial Officer, StanLib Asset Management. Appreciate the time.
The StanLib Flexible Income Fund is designed for pre- and post-retirement income and capital preservation needs. Retire without regret with StanLib Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
So some thoughts from me on the MPC press conference yesterday. So all was going as per normal, and the governor announced a 0.2% cut in the prime rate. It takes prime to 10.5%. Our real interest rate with inflation at 3% is therefore 7.5%, still a giant number. But then the Q&A came, and there was talk around the inflation target, and there has been a lot of talk. We've talked around it on this show, in the media, all over, around lowering our official inflation target to 3%. Currently, it is 3-6, and the governor always refers to 4.5. Expectation was that it would be announced at either the midterm budget policy statement in October or maybe the budget in February of next year. We know there's been talks happening between Treasury and the Reserve Bank. And then the governor basically just said yesterday, nope, they're going to be anchoring inflation at 3%. Essentially, that's now our target. He did use the word anchoring. He didn't say target, but it's the same impact. The question is, can he? Well, he pointed out the target range is 3-6%. He also mentioned that in the early days of the range, the SARB was really targeting sort of 5.99. This goes back to Tito Mboweni, Joel Marcus days. And in the early aughts, you can see that that did seem to be the case, where, you know, get inflation an inch below 6 and everyone was happy. The governor then referred yesterday to the 4.5%, which he has been mentioning forever and a day. And he made the point that in July 2017, they took the decision to anchor, again that word, inflation at 4.5%. And it worked. Inflation expectations have converged to that. And aside from the pandemic, we've kind of kept inflation at that sort of level. Post-pandemic, things went a little bit crazy, but it has worked. And now, 3%. It is the bottom of the range. It is within that 3-6. It is within their mandate. He commented, it's good for the economy, no doubt. He did say the upside risks to inflation were muted. He doesn't expect the CPI to trend much higher this year, maybe 3.3. There are some folks out there, Casey Sprake from Anchor, who's not so sure. She is worried about the big jump to a 3%. But I suppose what really matters is that I think this is within the Saab mandate. 3% is within the range. Treasury, they might feel a little bit upset, but here we are. Essentially, our inflation target is now 3%, and welcome to the new world. And that's our question today on LinkedIn and Twitter. What's your view? Is this good? Is it risky? Are you worried about rates going higher? Have your vote. Have your say. LinkedIn and Twitter. And that's it for today. We were chatting with Kieran Unioni yesterday, Scope Prime. We were talking about that rate decision. We asked what you thought the MPC would do. Over half of you said no change. Thankfully, you weren't on the MPC. A third said that the cut would be a quarter, which is what we got. The rest said you would like a 0.5%. Unfortunately, we did not get that. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning. The MoneyWeb website's in the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again Monday, Old Mutual Savings and Investment Monitor.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.